of Krishna consciousness clearly. A prominent example can be given in this regard. Festivals in ISKCON, festivals particularly, of course there are so many festivals that devotees conduct all over the world, but particularly among performing outgoing festivals, reaching to the public, we can especially think of Indradyumna Maharaj, who has what we can call family-friendly festivals with all kinds of things going on. Some things are not very Krishna conscious, this Indian dancing is not really very Krishna conscious, but but it's attractive to the public. And prasad is distributed, Srila Prabhupada's books are distributed, and he always in the festival gives a very straightforward, very clear Krishna conscious message. So people get to hear that. So that message has to be there. Otherwise, if it's only to attract people's senses, then what's the actual purpose? No one will get any idea of that. And it might be relatively easy to bring people into Krishna consciousness or something resembling Krishna consciousness at a sensual level. A prime example of that is the Festival of the Colors, which has become a prominent kind of preaching in ISKCON today, if you can call it preaching. Well, we can call it outreach. Members of the public are invited to ISKCON centers to throw colors on each other, and there may be among the music being blasted on the loudspeakers some rock and roll version of the Hare Krishna mantra, and people get prasad. Of course, nowadays in ISKCON, what's called prasad, we're not so sure of the purifying effect, because in many cases it's in India often devotees just go and buy something from a store and call it prasadam. And who's cooking? What is their consciousness? Are they following the four regulated principles? Are they chanting 16 rounds? These things are often questionable. We have the idea that if we call something prasad, then Krishna's giving his mercy. But there are certain conditions on which we can offer foodstuffs to Krishna and that he's pleased to accept it. So this is questionable when especially young men and women come and throw colors on each other and they have a lot of fun. But are people actually becoming Krishna conscious? If their impression of the Krishna conscious movement is some kind of fun and that's all, then it will be more difficult to bring people to Krishna consciousness. Something came to mind. In India, or based in India, there is a member of ISKCON, Brahmachari, who has become immensely popular on YouTube with his talks, which are very entertaining, so we're told. I did watch one for about 3 minutes. And there are a lot of jokes. He packed in 3 minutes, he packed in a lot of jokes. He's a good joker, no doubt about it. He's become immensely popular. The message is not very Krishna conscious, although you could draw some things which are tangential to Krishna consciousness from that. But it's actually become a problem in our preaching, at least in the preaching that myself and some others are trying to conduct in India and even in neighboring countries, because the public say, oh, can you give a talk like that? We'll organize everything. Give us a talk like that. But we don't want to talk like that. We want to talk Bhagavad Gita as it is. Now the idea, I've discussed all this in the On Speaking Strongly book. The idea is that, well, if we speak the message as it is, not many people will come. So we want people to come, right? Preaching means we want people to come to Krishna consciousness. So you do something that will attract people, and then you gradually introduce the message. So as I've discussed in this book, if we bring many people in, and then gradually we introduce the philosophy and the principles, then we'll gradually get less and less people. So you start off with a lot of people, but if you're actually going to give what we're supposed to give, then we'll end up with very few people, ultimately. If we speak clearly, we'll have very few people. But they'll know what the message is right from the beginning. If we do all this hocus-pocus, abracadabra kind of stuff, then, and we'll go on speaking that. So sometimes we speak love, peace, find the happiness within, find your inner child, and I don't know what bogus things they talk, new agey kind of stuff. Then on one side, and then somewhere else we say, hey, we don't really believe all that, but anyway, the real thing is to surrender to Krishna. And people get confused. And you may be careful not to say to surrender to Krishna, because there's some new people there. You don't want to tell them to surrender to Krishna, because then they'll go away. And so we tend not to very clearly tell people to surrender to Krishna, because we're always afraid that there'll be some people who are not ready to hear that in our estimation. So overall our preaching becomes wishy-washy. And maybe we'll ultimately get people to surrender to Krishna, but you have to tell them at some point, all the other stuff I was talking was bogus, so just forget all that. And it becomes more confusing to them. Whereas if you start off right away saying, this is the fact, the material world is full of suffering, we are all rotating in the cycle of birth and death, we have to surrender to Krishna, that will fulfill us completely and in all respects, then from the beginning it's clear. I'm told that by presenting yoga, there are people becoming devotees, and we make friends with Mayavadis, which we warn not to do. We're very careful. We're very clearly warned not to do that. And making friends with Mayavadis, then we, instead of attacking people, people don't like it if we attack others. So we have to be very sensitive to what people like. If we say that people are, if we use words like fools, rascals, and other things, which is the Shastric genre or the Shastric vocabulary, people won't like it, so we shouldn't say it. So better we don't say that. But then at what point are we going to introduce people to Bhagavad Gita as it is in Srimad Bhagavatam, in which these, that message is there very clearly. So we may be very careful not to give that message. And then what do? Then we have to give other books, not Prabhupada's books, with a message which is different. Because the message of Shastra is that anyone who doesn't surrender to Krishna is a fool and a rascal. That's the message of Shastra. We don't want to give that and give something else. Then we have to promote other books. And we're told that many people come to Krishna consciousness by this yoga, Mayavad, New Age kind of approach. But my question is, all right, maybe they're chanting Hare Krishna, but do they clearly understand that all these bogus people that you're associating with are bogus? Do you understand yourself? It's Vyasadeva was despondent. He himself got fed up. He did all his do this, do that. Yeah, whatever you like. You can do yoga. You can worship this god. You can go to heaven. You can go to the moon. You can do this. You can do that. And then eventually he got fed up. I did all that, and there's nothing there. And many of us, we may have had our own experience, even in this short lifetime, that before coming to Krishna consciousness, we went to this swami, and that yogi, and that bogi, and that rogi, and this and that, and we just felt there's nothing there. Who's had that experience? I think many have had that experience. And we came to Krishna, here there's something real, this is substantial, this is the truth. So maybe, hopefully, our great preachers of nonsense will eventually come to realize, well, actually, it's all nonsense. Maybe they won't. But meantime, in the Krishna conscious movement, we have all this nonsense floating around, and the clear distinction between reality and illusion is not there, because we're propagating illusion. We're told, don't say that you're a devotee. Don't wear neck beads. Don't tell anyone you're a devotee. Really? Well, of course, we may think I'm not a devotee, but how are we going to communicate anything about Krishna consciousness to others unless we present ourselves as representatives of Srila Prabhupada and the Parampara? Maybe it's better they don't, if they have such a funny message. Maybe it's better they don't represent themselves as devotees. But let's put it this way, in brief. We could have never imagined such a thing when Prabhupada was here. And if we proposed it to Prabhupada, it's very clear what he would say. Actually, Srila Prabhupada himself proposed teaching yoga to foreign tourists in Vrindavan. There's a discussion. And what is the program? They can come in and sit down cross-legged, and you give them Bhagavad Gita as it is class and tell them this is the highest yoga. And then you can go. He said you can have, 9 days, 2 chapters at a time. And the devotees are saying, well, if you tell them it's yoga class, they'll probably want to do some exercise. And Prabhupada said, you just tell them there's no need for that. This is the highest yoga. You don't need to do that. That was Prabhupada's idea. He himself was saying, if you say to teach yoga, that will be very attractive to the foreigners. So you teach them yoga. You can find it. It's in one conversation. In Vrindavan, was it in Vrindavan? I think it was in Bombay talking about Vrindavan. I can't remember exactly. Anyway, I wrote a whole book on this because I was so fed up about this. So if you want, read that book. It's right there on that table, on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service. Yeah, so... and choose some more questions. I think what you can do is first read it in English and then translate it. And in the meantime, I'll think about what to say. Oh no, it's simultaneous, so I won't have much chance.
Should we, as a preaching movement, present ourselves as Hindus? If we will derive a certain facilities.
Well, I discussed this in a book. It's called Women, Mothers, or Masters. It's been renamed now as Mothers and Masters. Why did I rename it, and why did I change the cover? Because the opponents of this book, who got it, public GBC comment made on it, never read the book, nor any of the GBC read it when they made the resolution. But the only objections they had, actual objections, were to the cover and the title. So I changed the cover and the title. So in that book, I put a section which is not... it's also there on the book table. But be careful, because according to the GBC, it's probably not following Srila Prabhupada. Yeah, I put a section also called Playing the Hindu Card. I don't know if you have such an idiom. Yes. You do in Croatian also. So it doesn't really give any answers to the question, but it just, it gives, it's an not a very long essay in which it gives many of the benefits of presenting ourselves as Hindus. There are many benefits, which can be, but at the end it says, the only problem is that if we present ourselves as Hindus, we can no longer present that this is a non-sectarian, universal truth for everyone. So that's a big problem. It's faustian. We sell our souls, so to speak. So that's the problem. Srila Prabhupada would... he would... When it was favorable for preaching, he would sometimes invoke the Hindu sentiment. Just like, for instance, any sentiment which could be used in Krishna consciousness, he would invoke. What was the prime message, or the message that Srila Prabhupada gave most of all? I spoke about this morning. We are not the body, right? We're not American, we're not Croatian, we're not Serbian, we're not Chinese, we're not men or women materially, we're not fat or thin, and so on. But then Srila Prabhupada, he often said that you are Americans to his disciples. You should do something for Krishna. You have such prestige and your country is so great. Do something for Krishna. In England, Srila Prabhupada said, previously you had a great empire. Now you have lost it. If you take a little advice from me, I can tell you how you can again rule the world. So he would appeal to their sentiment. He would often quote, it's from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bharata Bhumite Hoilo Manusha Janma Ja Janma Shata Kari Karo Paro Upaka. Indians, especially Indians, they should make their life successful in Krishna consciousness and do benefit for others by preaching Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada invoked that. So there is one essay in which it's in the Science of Self-Realization, not in the Russian edition. It was in the Russian edition, then they took it out. I discovered this a few years ago when someone asked me in a question and answer session in Russia should we consider ourselves to be Hindus? And in this essay, in the Science of Self-Realization, Prabhupada says that there is a misconception that the Krishna conscious movement represents the Hindu religion. But actually, we have nothing to do with it. And the whole essay explains why. So I called for an edition of a Russian edition of the Science of Self-Realization. And I was going to say, here, read this. And so I was given a copy. And I was looking for it, because I can read enough Russian to find out words like Hindu and things like that. And I was looking and looking, and I couldn't find it. And I said to someone, well, can you find this essay about Krishna consciousness, Hindu cult or divine culture? That's the name in English. And he said, well, it's not in there. I said, what do you mean it's not in there? And then they brought me an old edition and says, in the old edition, it's all in the new edition. So it was deliberately left out because in Russia they want to present themselves as Hindus, the movement as Hindu, because they find it very, or they thought it would be very helpful for defending their temple cause. But as it happened, the plans for the temple in Moscow got smashed anyway, unfortunately. So there is an essay in which Srila Prabhupada directly addresses this question. Are we Hindus? No. The answer is no, 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 and no throughout the essay. And Srila Prabhupada establishes that the real culture is Varnashram, and Hinduism has come out of that. But Krishna consciousness wants to establish actual Varnashram, not this Brahmin by birth Varnashram. But on the other hand, when Srila Prabhupada learned that the police in London had not given permission for Rath Yatra. Srila Prabhupada, he said, well, galvanize all the Hindus. This is an insult against the Hindu religion. Same thing with that brainwashing case in America in 1976. He said, organize all the Hindus. Not only the Hindus, he said, there are many scholars who have given reviews for our books. He said, we are representing a culture which is, historically speaking, at least 5,000 years old. So Srila Prabhupada, on principle, stated that we're not Hindu, but he would play the Hindu card sometimes also. So what was the question, actually, to get back to the question?
Should we, as a preaching movement, present ourselves as Hindus
if we will derive certain facilities from that? Well, it seems that Srila Prabhupada did so to a very limited extent. On the other hand, he definitely didn't want to be identified with various Hindu groups. Here's a question which one of our God brothers, Guru Gauranga Prabhu, who practically he was one of the founders, if not the founder, of ISKCON in Switzerland. I met him two or three years ago in Zurich. Now, this was the position he put. The government of Switzerland, they give a platform for the Christians, and they may be, I don't know exactly Christian, because Christianity is so big, they may be for Protestants and Catholics separately, but for the Christians, for Muslims, for all religions, to present their needs, concerns, and issues to the government. And they may even allot some funds to the various religious movements. Oh, here's and some place for erecting places of worship, possibilities to speak to on or give their opinion on various committees about moral and ethical issues that the government has to legislate about. But he said that there's nothing for the Hindus. Why? Because all the Hindu groups are separate. So, wouldn't it be a good idea if all the Hindu groups came together? And if we want to have a voice, we should be in there too. So, that's a consideration, isn't it? If we want to have facility from the government, which they're willing to give to some extent, and a voice of some kind, then if we present ourselves as ISKCON, not very likely, because we're numerically very small. If we go along with the Hindus, more likely, because Hinduism is accepted as one of the world's great religions. So you can see it's not such an easy question to answer. I would say still we should maintain our separateness, which is pretty much what all the Hindu in India, what all the Hindu groups do. In India itself, a BJP leader, BJP Bharatiya Janata Party, it's difficult to explain. It's the political wing of a much bigger movement. So a BJP leader at some level, not super high, he asked me, how can we bring all the Hindu groups together? When Srila Prabhupada was asked that by Yogi Bhajan, I believe he had a group. You know, heard of Yogi Bhajan? He was quite influential in America. I don't think anywhere else, not in India or anywhere else. Sikh guru. He liked Prabhupada a lot. But Prabhupada didn't make any concessions to him. But he asked Srila Prabhupada, how can we bring all the groups? We're just trying to bring all the groups together. And Prabhupada said, you won't. They won't come together. He said, if they want to come together, let them accept Bhagavad Gita as it is. Surrender to Krishna. All the Hindus will accept, at least verbally, they will accept that we accept Bhagavad Gita. So if you accept Bhagavad Gita, then accept what Krishna says, surrender to Krishna. But Prabhupada said that they won't do. So you won't be able to bring them together. So that is the difficulty. It is, if we identify with all these groups, then we can't speak our message very clearly. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was at least once asked, why are you making new temples? Well, there are already so many temples in India. Why are you making new mutts? He wouldn't say temple, mutt. He said, so that we can speak our own message without any constraint. If we have to speak in someone else's place, then we'll be constrained by what they say. When Srila Prabhupada first came to America, first came to New York City. He was sometimes a guest of one Dr. Mishra, who was a medical doctor by profession, but he took up teaching some Mayavadi mumbo jumbo. And Srila Prabhupada was a guest of it. Personally, Srila Prabhupada kept a good relationship with him. But then when Dr. Mishra invited Srila Prabhupada to speak to his group, to Dr. Mishra's group, then Dr. Mishra regretted doing that because Srila Prabhupada, by what Srila Prabhupada said, it became clear to Dr. Mishra's followers that Dr. Mishra was talking nonsense. And so Dr. Mishra said, all right, next time you just do kirtan. So often we do that, isn't it? We our devotees, they do kirtan. They have kirtan groups, but they don't speak the philosophy. Or if they do, they speak it in a very diluted way. That by chanting, you'll feel the bliss of the Supreme. I'm just imagining what they could say. But that we have to surrender to Krishna, that they won't say. So, following the example of our previous acharyas, I don't know any of our previous acharyas who compromised with various other groups. The idea that all the groups should come together, this seems to have originated with someone who's known as Ramakrishna. Let's not fight. Jato mat tato pat. All paths lead to the same goal. Otherwise, traditionally, Vedic culture is highly polemic, not harmonizing. In one sense, very tolerant. We don't find Mayavadis and Vaishnavas killing each other, but verbally very strong. And not just in throwing invectives, but also, or most importantly, in philosophical dispute. When the philosophical dispute is stopped, then we're just left with sentiment. Religion without philosophy is sentiment, fanaticism. And when there's sentiment, then peace and love, brothers and sisters. That's what you're left with. Talk of peace and love, and no peace and love. All superficial. Personally, I feel like vomiting when I all these new agey. It's like taking something like bubble gum, which is it's too sweet and it tastes artificial, and there's no nutrition there, and it's just ugh. So all the new age, love, peace, find the inner child, and ugh. I don't think I could if I tried. Try to. Very, very distasteful. So, the example that our acharyas give is not to compromise with all these groups. On a personal level, if we meet them, we might be friendly with them. Respectful. Some of them are very strictly following Vedic principles. In many ways, they're better situated than others. Srila Prabhupada also said that when he was asked by Achyutananda Swami, is it better to be a worshipper of Kali or a Hindu who worships Kali and so many other gods, or to be a Christian who worships one god only? He gave the example of Kali because Kali worship, especially as it's conducted in Bengal, is pretty much the lowest level of Hinduism, inasmuch as there's animal sacrifice. You see the figure of Kali with her skulls around her neck, naked from the waist up, her breasts splayed out everywhere, her hair loose, which is completely uncivilized according to Vedic culture. Nowadays, that's not being followed, but actually the hair of women should be braided or tied up. Trampling over her husband, it's just about the opposite of everything of high-level culture. Oh yeah, and she's got a chopper in her hand with blood and holding skulls with a garland of skulls. It's very much in the mode of ignorance. And Kali worship, that's getting even below the Vedic level. That goes down into what's called left-wing tantra. You get all worship of ghosts and all kinds of things, copulating with corpses and all kinds of really, really tamasic things. But Srila Prabhupada said it's better to be a member of the Vedic culture, to be a Hindu, in other words, because within the Vedic culture there's a process of purification and elevation, which isn't there elsewhere. Srila Prabhupada also said that everyone in India is Krishna conscious, even the Muslims. So personally, I, having lived most of this life in India and neighboring countries, I have a lot of regard for the culture, and especially when I come from the West to India. When you're in India, you think, these people, they lost it so badly. When you get back, you think, oh, what a relief. What a relief to get back. It's actually also much easier to train devotees in the Vedic principles of Vedic culture, Vedic proper behavior and all this thing. They seem to have innate understanding of that, whereas it's very difficult in the West. And a great example of that is this mother's book, where many of our Western mothers within our movement, they hate the book. They hate it so bad they can't even read it. They know exactly what they hate, but they know they hate it. It's really a difficult message for them to swallow. Which is probably why Srila Prabhupada, he didn't force it down their throat. There is evidence that Srila Prabhupada wanted to restrict women in their menstrual period from coming to the temple and so many other things, which is still largely followed in India. But it's breaking down. Why is it breaking down? Because the girls have to go to school, they have to go to the office, and at home there's no joint family, so they have to cook during their menstrual period. So they think, well, we do everything else, we can come to the temple also. So you find, I wrote in that book that you find them, if you find them sitting just outside the temple, you know, oh, they're in their menstrual period. They shouldn't even come that close. But then you find them sitting just inside and think, oh, now it's gone down another stage. And then they're dancing in the kirtan, flailing around in front of the temple, and you don't know what's what, what's going on, whether they're in their period or not. So they're losing it all. That's just one example. It's a pretty gross example, because even a generation or two, no woman would dream of going to the temple during her period. But modern life, Srila Prabhupada himself, there's one conversation in which he's asking that he would have female disciples, often they would cook, generally they would cook for him. And you can find in one conversation, oh, the two of them, they're both in their period, Prabhupada said, so who's going to cook? So you could see, Prabhupada, he didn't want to take food cooked by menstruating women. It's a very gross example, sorry, it came to mind. How the culture is breaking down. But if we say this in the West, one of my disciples who's in America, he's from Gujarat, and so is his wife from Gujarat, and which is in India. And his wife, he told me that his wife was once standing outside the temple, and a devotee, a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, a lady devotee, said, well, come inside. He said, no, I can't come in. I'm in my period. He said, why don't you come inside? Prabhupada didn't introduce that. You should follow Prabhupada. Why are you going against Prabhupada? So in other words, Srila Prabhupada allowed some things which he didn't really want. Seeing the attitude of the young women there, he wanted to bring them to Krishna consciousness, but he didn't force the standards that Indian women would automatically force. He didn't force it on them, but the concessions that he gave, his disciples, many of them, they take that's what Prabhupada actually wanted. And you must, if you don't go against the whole tradition, then you're against Prabhupada. You see what's going on? So this is a point which I made in that book, and I want to make it more in my book on Vaishnav culture, etiquette and behavior, that the adjustments that Srila Prabhupada made for the mlechas, actually, we are coming from mlecha culture. I hope you all agree with that. Although we're not supposed to say such nasty words, because nowadays we're being nice, but actually we're all from mlecha culture. So the concessions that Srila Prabhupada made were not meant to be the rules for the next 10,000 years. Srila Prabhupada said he wanted to introduce Varnashram. Varnashram society, there are many, many rules. It's called civilization. The English word civilization is a misnomer. Misnomer means, it's something like calling a cow an elephant. See the cow out there? Do you see that elephant out there? And you look and see, and it's a cow. Of course, in Zagreb, you don't see cows wandering around as you do in India. But that's also stopping now, because they're not allowing cows in the cities more and more. So if I point out the way and say, oh, see that elephant, you look and see it's a cow, that's called a misnomer. You call something by a name which doesn't apply to it. So the word civilization, it's an English word, right? You have a word in Croatian. The exact meaning of the word civilization, as English people understand it, is what the English people do. That's called civilization. Not the Croatians. Not the Germans. The English. And not the working class English. The lords and ladies who eat pheasant. You have pheasants here also. They shoot the pheasant, hang it up, and when the maggots are falling out, then civilized people eat it. It's now illegal in England to do that, but that was the culture, that civilization. And you have a very nice suit and tie, and you speak in an accent like a gentleman. I can't even imitate it anymore, I lost it. Oh, here's something that Jayadvaita Swami recently told me. This is very interesting. That in dramas, when we have demons and Hiranyakashipu, where the demon comes on, right? Ah, ha, 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 ha. That's how we show the demons in dramas, right? He said, no, no, no. Nowadays, the demon, what is it? He says, he said, there's a very sophisticated man with a nice suit, and the suit is just shorter than the shirt. You know that? Real civilized people, the suit arm length should be shorter than the shirt, which is white. There are gold cufflinks. So he's very, has nice hair, nicely shaved, no bristles showing. He picks up the phone and says, Howard, we seem to be having a problem with Prahlad. Can you do something? Silence. From this end. Yes, Howard. A little more silence. Thank you, Howard. And puts down the phone. That's the modern demon. Very sophisticated, very civilized demon. Oh, we seem to be having a problem in Syria. Can you do something? Yes, thank you. So this is civilization, but actual civilization, that we have to learn from the Vedic culture. There are many things to follow. And every time I come to the West, I think, I'm not going to come again until I finish my book on Vaishnav culture, because, and then sometimes, often when I'm leaving devotees say, well, is there anything you want to say to correct us? I say, yeah, but I'm not going to say, because you'd go crazy if I tell you. Let me write the book. Then you can, I don't know, that'll get banned also, I guess. It's good for sales when the books gets banned. It won't be very popular, that I can say. But actual Brahminical culture, we should try to introduce that. That's the actual culture. Hindus also need to learn. This book, this Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, I brought out how many years ago? 15 years? 20 years ago? One devotee, a disciple of mine, he's from a Tamil Smarta Brahmana family, which generally is considered of those few Indians who are interested in Indian culture seriously. Generally, it's considered that the Tamil Smarta Brahmanas are pretty cultured. They've kept their culture pretty well. That was 20 years ago. I don't know about now. Even they themselves think they are, but actually, they don't really follow much. What do you think, Mr. Tamil Smarta Brahmana? Smarta family? Yeah. So anyway, he said to me, this disciple of mine, about 20 years ago in the book, he said, I read the book, I didn't know anything that was in the book. It was all new to me. And that book I wrote is supposed to be a primer, what do you call that? An hors d'oeuvre. What's the word? There's a word in English for that. Hors d'oeuvre. It means a what's the word in English? Snack to start the meal. Appetizer. That's the word. That's the word. An appetizer for the big book on Vaishnav culture, etiquette and behavior, which will probably be bigger than Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava. There's a lot of rules in there. And that's only an that itself is only a beginning. Oh no. I'd like to see that made the a requisite for those who are taking Brahmin initiation. It's not just passing a Bhakti Shastra exam. It's not just getting initiated and then 6 months later getting a rubber stamp or a thread on the shoulder. One should know the culture. Know it and live it. Yeah. Should we wait 20 years? Well, I tell you what, I won't come. I really want to do this. I want to stay in one place and finish that book. Will you allow me? No. So? Then I'll die and it won't be finished. I think it's better to stay in one place and finish it. First I have to finish this Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada book, which is almost finished. But many a slip twixt the cup and the lip. It's an English saying, many a slip twixt the cup and the lip. Twixt is Old English for between. Many a slip between the cup and the lip means you have the cup right next to your lip and you're thinking, I'm going to drink, but you might slip. Or another saying in this regard is, don't count your chickens until they are hatched. You have six eggs, that means six chickens. No, not until they hatched. So it's not quite there until it's actually published. I have some insight into what Srila Prabhupada meant when he said, when I publish a book, I feel I've conquered an empire. It's a big thing. It's not a small thing to do. Actually, I think it's more important than coming and seeing all of you. It's a lot more fun coming and seeing you. It's a lot less demanding. But I have several important books to finish. I can't expect to live very long. Or even if I live long, gradually the physical and mental powers will decrease, naturally. So I think overall it's better that I finish these books. I have hundreds of pages of materials for this Vaishnava etiquette. I think if I sit for 1 year, 1.5 years maybe, I could finish that. Theoretically, I should be able to do it in 1 year, but it always takes longer than I think it should do. So that, and then a very important book on family life in Krishna consciousness, Guru and Disciple in Krishna consciousness. These are very important books. Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada, Volume 2 and 3. Volume 2, various issues such as, did Srila Prabhupada make mistakes? How do we understand Srila Prabhupada? Srila Prabhupada's use of the English language. These are various topics which which could be explored in Volume 2. And Volume 3, what would be what Prabhupada wanted for ISKCON and where we went wrong and where how we should go right. So these are important books. And there are others also. So if I don't travel, then there's more chance of getting them finished. And if I do travel, it saps away the life energy. What I need to do is to make more sannyas disciples, and then they can all go around and do everything for me, the traveling part. Any volunteers? You could be. Some of those who are getting older, you should think also. How long are you going to? Koto nidra jao maya pishachira kole. How long are you going to be in family life? Supposed to come out. Age 50, right? Pancha shordvang vanang vrajet. The age of 50, you should come out. Srila Prabhupada showed that example. At least vanaprastha life. Why work all your life? One thing is that mostly our devotees marry late. And then when they're 50, their kids are still kids. And you shouldn't leave at that time. You have to. But when the children are at least able to look after themselves, if not married, then what's the point of going on working? Then you can, sannyas exactly you may not, but at least vanaprastha, you can retire and do full-time service. Then what's the point of going on working? Usually a devotee says, I have to pay the mortgage on the house. You don't have to pay the mortgage on the house, sell it, get finished. If you have a house. I think most of you don't have a house. Most of the devotees in the ex-communist and socialist bloc, they're not very well to do. Some of you have Giridhari. You have your father's property. You could sell it to get enough space to buy half a toilet in London. Probably not even that. On the other hand, if you're living in London, you could sell your little house and you could live for the rest of your life on the money, at least in India. Just a little place in London, £400,000, that's like €500,000, just enough space for two people to live. So you can think like that. Why remain at home forever? The Krishna conscious movement needs devotees who can dedicate. There's very good chance, scope for bringing in new young people. We convinced ourselves about, how long ago? About 30 years ago that we can't make devotees. And then we invented all these new ways of preaching. But actually, we can make devotees by speaking the message of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Oh, I was just in Germany. I met there one devotee, Ananda Krishna Prabhu, who's giving lectures in Germany. He has his YouTube channel. He has 8 new bhaktas. He told me they're all men and they're all German. They all came from his giving very straightforward lectures on YouTube. He told me that because he said the year before we had mostly female devotees. He said, I don't mind, but I can't train them so in the way that I can. We're happy anyone joins, but the men, I can train them very intimately. So he's very happy with that. He's training them. From straightforward preaching. And if anyone comes to this movement, they'll check it out first on the internet, right? There's a lot of stuff which might put people off, but they see that and they see Here's someone preaching, and then they come and see. They're living this message, and say, I want to be part of this. And there may, in the past, there may be child abuse, guru fall downs, this, but this person's got something real. I want to be part. I had the same thing. I first got one of Srila Prabhupada's books, Krishna Book Volume 2. I didn't get it myself. It was in someone's house. I read it. I was in Ireland. There was no center of ISKCON in Ireland at the time, so I came to England to join, not to join, to see the ISKCON, because I thought, look, this is something good. I owe it to myself to check it out. But I thought, I don't expect that there's anyone who's actually living this message. Just like I'd read the Bible, and I thought, Jesus, great. But where's the person who's living like Jesus? I can't just be like Jesus myself, but if there's anyone living like that, I could take guidance from them. So I read this Krishna book. I thought it was very nice. I didn't understand that much, but I could understand this is something substantial. So at least I should check it out and see. And if it matches what's in the book, I have to join it. And it did, so I joined. Nowadays, maybe not. As one devotee told me some years ago, that one man had approached him and said, should I follow what's in your books or what you do? That question should not arise. That will arise by all this indirect preaching, isn't it? And then indirect acting. It's all right if you don't eat only prasadam. Or it's all right if you offer to Krishna all kinds of things which are doubtful. It's all right if you do this, if you do that. Then what's left to being a devotee? What's the difference between being... Then you're... What's the difference between being a vegetarian? There's not much left. Then you become a vegetarian Hindu. That's all. Yeah, you believe in Krishna, but we don't be too fanatical. But for people who want the real thing, who are sincere, what's that called? That's called sincere. They will recognize that. Paramatma within their heart will direct them. If we give the real thing, Paramatma will send people who want that. If we don't give the real thing, maybe because we don't believe it ourselves fully, or we don't have faith that Krishna will send people if we give the real thing, or if we ourselves want to compromise, then we'll preach like that, and we'll get people like that, and we'll be happy like that. And like the Mayavadis will say, oh, these Krishna people, they're too fanatical. If you give the real thing, Krishna will send people. And even if they don't come, then what else should we do? No one who is preaching Bhagavad Gita, is no one's coming. What should we do? Preach something else. No, it's not, it shouldn't be, the question shouldn't be there. Any more questions? I don't know if I'm answering the questions exactly, but saying some things. Oh, what's the time? Is it almost 9 o'clock? Oh, okay, then we'll finish now. Yes, we'll finish. Hare Krishna.